Street View Podcast is part of the Dallas Public Library's Homeless Engagement Initiative, dedicated to increasing community awareness of issues related to homelessness. The opinions expressed are solely those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Dallas Public Library or the City of Dallas.
How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? You got it all figured out, straight from your cubicle. Life's a musical, maybe a carousel. How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? Perception starts with selection. The same streets you walk on, they carry their own view. This is Street View.
Father God, God of love, God of mercy and might, we come right now on a unified front, together, all seeking answers to these questions. You know, where we belong, what we can do to better help our brother, man, or our sister, or just be something more than just space takers. Thank you for today. Thank you for life. Most importantly, thank you for love, real love. We appreciate you. We thank you, and we come humbly, asking for wisdom to pass from person to person, place to place. Thanks. In Jesus Christ's name, amen. Yo, what up, listeners? How y'all doing out there? It's the podcast host, Rashad Anthony Dickerson. Some would call me the host with the most. I ain't gonna go all that far. I got a bunch of folks in the studio today. I mean, a bunch of folks. I'm gonna just start naming folks, and I want every one of you guys to know that I am truly grateful to have you guys on the show. I have Miss Cindy Crane with the Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance. She's the president, CEO. Thank you for coming on the show.
Ooh, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you, Rashad.
I have the one and only Miss Spriggs in the building, Antoinette Spriggs, representing the Dallas Public Library as the administrator of the, or not even administrator, let's put it this way, as the help desk organizer.
Rashad, I'm the homeless engagement coordinator.
Okay, homeless engagement coordinator.
She's a woman of many hats.
Thank you for coming.
It's always a pleasure.
Jay, thank you.
Appreciate it.
I got Jason Parks in the building, y'all. Now, he was on episode three of season one.
Yes.
Okay, I also have his beautiful wife in the building, Miss Trisha. Trisha Deal, who will soon be Miss Trisha Deal Parks. You know we can't forget about the captain in the building on the ones and twos, barely ever speaking, is our great sound engineer, Mr. Ryan, and Miss Jasmine Africa Walla, my co-host, will be here shortly. I want to talk about something that's been really plaguing me and troubling me as of late. You know, I see a lot of perspectives, and I see a great need. Because a lot of people voice their perspectives and have alternate perspectives, and there's nothing wrong with that. Everybody's free to have an opinion. It's a part of being human. But I'm missing some morality in what I see on an everyday basis. Morality, you know, the thing that drives us together, the thing that makes us thrive as a unit, as a whole, the principles we stand by, those things are kind of absent. So I do the podcast in hopes that this might actually show up one day. Or it may smack me in my face and say, I'm right here, you know? So when I think about morality, I think about organization. I think about key components of organization. You know, team, you know, rules, regulations, guidelines. And when I think of all of that, I think of you, Miss Craig. I think of the Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the MDHA. Sorry.
Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance is like an umbrella organization's alliance, coalition, partnership, collaborators,
League.
Collaboration. So its intent is to take all the components and agencies and organizations and persons who help or experience a homelessness together so that when we confront an individual who is experiencing homelessness, our system, the way we communicate, collaborate, and coordinate our services work well. And the primary goal is so that that person experiences homelessness with the shortest amount of time, the experience is brief, and that it doesn't happen again. And that is a very lofty goal.
Efficient.
And achieving efficiency in an effective system takes a lot of work because this is a big town and you have over 80 agencies and over 3,000 people experiencing homelessness at any point in time.
Right.
And it is a challenge, but we know that with good organizational skills, systems, analysis, doing the right thing, knowing that it isn't all about cost-benefit analysis. And though safety is important, sometimes you have to reduce thresholds to bring the tent bigger, to bring more people in. Those are kind of the morality challenges that we have.
Yes, ma'am.
And I hope that Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance, as it enters this new era, with under new leadership that I've been around for 9 months now, is that the mission is never forgotten. That our goal is to make homelessness rare, brief, and non-recurring for people who live in our community.
A1. Excellent. I appreciate that. So you said something, point in time. You guys got the point in time count coming up, huh?
We do. You know, when you want to solve a problem, you need to know its nature and its extent. And so all across the United States, sometime during the last 10 days of January, we go out and we count the number of persons who are experiencing homelessness, those on the street and those in emergency shelters or transitional housing. And in Dallas and actually throughout Texas, we're all going to do it on Thursday, January 21 at night. Big volunteer effort to go out and count individuals who are experiencing homelessness. Then we take that data, we analyze it, we compare it to what was it like last year. And then we take that information, say, of these people who are experiencing homelessness and these demographics, also how much housing did we have on January 21? And where's the gap? Where do we need more housing? What kind of services do we need? Where's the shortfall? Where's the gap? And then we got to spend the rest of the year doing the work necessary to meet as many of the gaps as possible.
Why would you guys do this at the coldest point of the year?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, you know, it's a lot easier to count individuals when they're under a roof than when they're outside.
True.
And when you say, are you homeless? The definition of homeless means that you are going to be spending the night in a place not meant for human habitation or meant for temporary shelter. So that's where we go out at night. And you had to pick a time during the year where across the United States, you might have the most accurate count. And when it's really cold out, most people seek shelter. So it's easier to get a more accurate count. And you do it in a blitz mass format so that you get that. Don't duplicate numbers. You don't do it over many days. It has to do with having a very accurate count.
You know what, Jay? Tommy at the bridge used to say, that hawker gets your mind right. It'll run you in here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do remember him actually even saying that to me one time. But I used to stay at the bridge when it first opened. And like I said in the first podcast, when I was on the first podcast, the shelters are not for me no more. I've tried almost every shelter in Dallas. And they were, if it wasn't the client stealing my clothes, I even caught one of their people at the bridges in the storage room going through my stuff and going through other people's stuff and taking it out of there. So with that, I know that's why I don't do the shelters no more.
Yeah. You know, malfeasance is another big problem. You know what I'm saying? Malfeasance, word of the day, is an abusal of power for those who don't know what that means. And you're right, Jay. I wanted to ask you something. Tell me about a cold night as a man that's homeless.
A cold night?
A cold night.
I could tell you what a cold night was 2 days ago.
Why don't you?
2 days ago, because we was out here. We weren't out in it. We were in a parking garage, but it was still cold going through there. It was 30-something degrees, almost freezing. It was like 34 degrees. We did have blankets. We had sleeping bags, but it as cold as it was, those sleeping bags didn't even matter.
Yeah.
Because it was that cold. And the way we was at, that wind would just whip through there. Yeah. It didn't matter how, I don't think it would have mattered how many clothes or how much we had on. We still would have been cold.
Yeah.
So a cold night here in, especially here in Dallas, you don't know when it's gonna, I mean, change. I mean, I've seen it go, I've seen the weather go from 80 degrees one day, and then right next the next day, it go down to 40 degrees, 45 degrees. That's a 40, 35 degree difference from the night before.
Right.
So coldness here in Dallas, I mean, compared to Chicago, I mean, Chicago's way colder.
Yeah.
They don't call it the Windy City for nothing.
Yeah.
But okay, down here in Dallas, it does get cold. That's why I don't even listen to the news, when the weather in the news, because that's estimation they're giving you. They're giving you an estimate on what the weather's going to be.
Yeah.
Not exactly what the weather's going to be.
You know, Jason, as part of the homeless count, we're actually going to do a survey where the volunteers are going to ask, you know, a few brief questions, because they're going to be late in the middle of the night.
Right.
And one of the questions that I've added that hasn't been on the survey in the past in Dallas is, why didn't you seek shelter tonight? And that's important, because folks want to say, well, we have some shelter beds available, and it's important to understand, and there's a lot of different reasons. So that's something that it's going to be on that. And if I was interviewing you right now and I said, and we're on question 14 of the survey, and I said, well, Jason, how come you decided to spend the night in this parking garage tonight rather than go to the shelter?
And my answer would be to you is, I've done the shelters. I've done almost every one of them. The only one that I haven't done is because I'm not old enough is the Austin Street Shelter. I'm not old enough for the Austin Street Shelter. You got to be 45. 40 for males, it's 45. Mm-hmm. You got to be 45 and over. Mm-hmm. Females, you can get in at 18. Am I right?
Yeah.
With the females?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 18 for the females. 45, you got to be for the males. Mm-hmm. Why is the age gap so different between the men and the women? I can never understand that. That's one shelter that I would love to have gone to, but they got an age limit on it for the men.
Mm-hmm. Well, the understanding behind the age limit for the men is that by the time you reach 45, testosterone levels will have dropped and you'll be less aggressive and less prone to incidents happening with fighting, the ladies.
Fighting, mm-hmm. stuff like that, arguments. Mm-hmm. And it's not only with the ladies, too. I've seen it with the men, too. So, I mean, it goes both ways. Yeah, especially for the ladies. Yeah, you don't want somebody staying in an area with a female that they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And has to see him every day. Well, so
that's what's all actually going on up under Tent City, man. Tent City's been getting a lot of flack, a lot of publicity. And I want to know, I just want to know, Miss Cindy.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that?
Well, when I started with MDHA in March, I had one of the Dallas Police Department's crisis intervention team take me out, because I said, I need to know the unsheltered.
Yeah.
And, of course, we went under I-45. And I immediately said, whoa. I mean, I had dealt with some large tent encampments in Fort Worth and Tarrant County. When they got to 30 persons, I mean, it was
big.
We got to fix this.
It was big, yeah.
But of course, they were on private property, a little different deal.
Right.
And I thought about it for a few weeks, and I knew what was considered the best practices on, well, how do you do that? You do very intensive, consistent case management. You assess people for the resources they need to get them into a housing situation. Right. And you connect them to those resources. And so I pitched to some leaders and said, let's do this. The shelters are doing there. This is an untapped. So we've got a volunteer group, Street Outreach Task Force, together to go out there every Wednesday. And we've been going there ever since. Part of that story is doing a count, like a quick point in time count.
Mm-hmm.
The first count we did was 85. The last one that we did that was yesterday was 219.
So was that here in Dallas?
That's under I-45. That's Tent City. Went from 85 to 219 in the course of that time. But we've got porta potties and trash cans. I got
those. And I did hear about that. Yeah. They do have them out there now, because
it's just public health, dignity, human dignity.
And I agree with that. You can't live around human feces. That's like a dog pooing in his own backyard.
Yeah.
And then sleeping in it.
So. But it is a challenge, and it's a challenge to the policymakers. It's a challenge to the city. It's a challenge to neighborhoods and businesses and the people who are experiencing homelessness. These are popping up all over the United States. Tent cities are now a recurring phenomenon. You're seeing it. So I brought in one of the national research experts on it last summer. Dr. Chris Herring, he came and spoke at United Way and talked about that how does this community respond, because they're in a area that is privately owned. I mean, it's state. And they want to clean it up. They want it to go away. But where would you have them go? And that's the challenge we face now, that we need much more intensive street outreach. I cannot effectively serve people living under 45 with four or five volunteers once a week. So we're working on that, applying for grants and setting that as a priority to expand street outreach more than just the police department, more than the PATH team for MetroCare Services. We need dedicated street outreach.
Every day.
Going out there.
Somebody that will go out there with you every day, every time you need them.
Yeah. And start doing those assessments and figuring out, okay, how are we going to find you a place to live? How are we going to do that? It takes intensive case management and it takes dedicated staff and it's going to be full time. That's a small city under there. Literally.
It is.
And it's one of many encampments.
Yes, it's just by far the very largest.
Exactly. And the one that's received the most media attention, right? I think I looked at some report from the U.S. Council of Mayors on, I think it said like 395 people were on the streets, something like that, of those homeless. And I thought, man, that number's got to be much bigger.
Yeah, that was the number that was identified during the point in time count, right? January 2015. Mm-hmm. And we always know when we count the unsheltered homeless that the number you find is low. That's why this year, I've trying to get at least 750 volunteers to go out that night. Usually it's just 60 or 70. In Fort Worth, we would have 500 people go out and count the homeless. So that's one of the things that best practice is bringing here, all that volunteer effort going out. I have the entire area mapped on GIS and all the effort to make sure that we get a very accurate count, because that is way lower.
Well, and it's one of the coldest months of the year, so even if you're counting, and I know that that's part of just streamlining when the point in time count's done. Are there any surveys that are done any other time of the year to at least support, you know, or expand the data that's collected that one day?
Most communities have what's called a homeless management information system. It's a computer database of people experiencing homelessness. And in some communities, every provider puts their client data in there. So you literally could hit print every day, except for the unsheltered. The unsheltered homeless might be in there because when a PATH member or an outreach street outreach worker goes, they come see you, they put in Jason, and they said, saw him today, put in a case note. What's important for that is that I have documented your unsheltered homelessness, which is important for eligibility and programs. So in Dallas, that system only currently, we have an HMIS system managed by Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance. It only contains about 3% of people experiencing unsheltered and emergency sheltered homeless. In Fort Worth, it was like 98%. Wow. So the data is more accurate, but there is a plan to improve that dramatically. In other words, all the different service providers who provide emergency shelter get in the same system so the data is accurate. And if clients go from one shelter to the other, it's not you don't have to re-identify them. So that data follows them from shelter to shelter then? Yeah, that's our goal, because then we've got some real informative information to have, and that's one of our goals at MDHA.
Who has access to HMIS? Is that just continuum of care providers, or would it also be like your community-based providers?
It would just be those who are given permission to see, because it's private information. And so we only share it, and it's maintained within the continuum of care, the HMIS administrator. That's MDHA.
So that's like the doctor client. That's like a doctor client thing.
Absolute client consent and all that. But I can issue aggregate data of numbers, but I don't reveal individual information, right, because that's your private information. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. But once you start having that information, suddenly you can say, someone says, how long does someone experience homelessness in Dallas? I could open up and say the average length of stay of homelessness in this community is 92 days. Mm-hmm. And then I can say, well, next year you're going to say, all right, have we improved? Is it down to 80 days? No. I can't tell you that, but those are some of the metrics you want to be able to tell a community to say, are we doing well or not? And what's the number of homeless? Is it accurate or is it not? So data will help us
here
tell
in Dallas,
a better story.
I think when the bridge opened, it messed up. They messed up by advertising the bridge before it opened, because they advertised it on the CNN. So everybody across the nation was watching this. This state-of-the-art homeless shelter, that's what they were calling it, a state-of-the-art homeless shelter. It looked like a college, a little mini college campus when it first opened.
Fort Worth is about to open one too next year, True Worth Center.
But do you think that's the reason why there's so many homeless people here in Dallas County, because they advertised this homeless shelter on national television?
I don't think so. And one of the things, I've worked in homeless and managing data since 2004. And when you know data is good when it's consistent year to year, even if there's varying ways that you collect data and information. One of the variables that we measure, what was the zip code of your last permanent address? And every year you'd say, Fort Worth, say, well, we're taking care of Dallas homeless. Mm. Dallas said, we're taking care of Fort Worth homeless. All right. So, well, what does the data say?
Right.
Though there is very little information in the emergency shelters that's aggregated in one place for me to report, I can tell you most communities in Fort Worth consistently, we had about 86% of the homeless were from Fort Worth. We're from Tarrant County. So we have that. What was interesting in 2014 and in 2015, suddenly that 16% not from here rate went to 30%.
Wow.
It was dramatic, which, you know, but you've got to look at this from a national scope. And the top three places that were not Tarrant County were, four, California, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Dallas. Those were the four places of the people who were not from. So 30% of the homeless suddenly went from 16 to 30% in 1 year. I can't give you an equivalent statistic. If I were to run what I do know, we're still going to run probably about 85% of the data that I do have. They would say they were from Dallas County. So it's always easy. You want to say that. You get that one anecdote. They came from, you know, after the hurricane, you know, they all came from New Orleans. It's not, but still, when I get calls from people out of town, and I took a call from a lady a couple of days ago, she was in Louisiana. So that makes sense. It's next door to Texas. Mm-hmm. But primarily, we generate our homeless individuals locally.
Hey, you guys, stay tuned. We'll be right back with Street View Podcast.
Cindy, I'm so glad that you're on the show today, and we're excited about MDHA and the future of MDHA. We know that you're newer to MDHA. We had Mike Fianza, your predecessor, on in season one, and we had a great conversation with him, and we're excited to find out what's sort of in store for MDHA in the future and what your perception is on the outlook of homelessness in Dallas and where some opportunities for growth and for reduction in services.
You know, one of the changes that we're seeing in Dallas, and we're seeing it all over the United States, is that where once upon a time, a lot of human services, especially in the field of homelessness, was just helping those immediate needs, shelter, food. And what we know that we had to really change the view to say that when someone experiences homelessness, the first question and the focus must always be housing, because housing is what ends the homelessness. And the other thing that is changing is that it isn't about saying, I serve 100 people, I serve 1,000 people, I feed 1,000 meals a day. It's on performance now. And so the changes are is that I know that you are helping and providing services, but there is good practices and practices that are not as effective. And so we're moving to a performance-based system. And that has to do with the data we talked about earlier and measures. How long, how quickly can someone who enters your shelter receive case management services? What services do you provide to help them get an SSI, SSDI application in? How quickly do you assist them with their Texas benefits? How, you know, those time stamps. So that performance-based system, the accountability factor, because a lot of these agencies, many of them are funded philanthropically and through gifts and charitable contributions, and increasingly more and more are funded through tax dollars, state agencies, federal agencies. So there's accountability, and we expect accountability. And we expect that people, even though they're experiencing homelessness, should receive good customer service and effective service. Things that are changing now very dramatically in 2016 is to say, if there are 100 people experiencing homelessness, their needs vary. And we are going to use common tools to assess need based on the severity of their service needs. Some people have very clinical, severe health and mental health conditions, have been experiencing homelessness for years. And someone lost a job, got a divorce, didn't pay, and they have some capacities there. Who do you give permanent supportive housing to? Who do you invest the most of your array of tools to resolve homelessness? We are establishing a system of prioritization to say, you are a top priority. So I need to make sure that of the tools that I have, the most expensive ones go to the people who need it the most. And that is called coordinated assessment system prioritization. Those processes are going to start, and you're going to start seeing those beginning in February or March. We're doing that experimentally with the person under I-45, asking them, documenting their homelessness, documenting their, asking them what was called a SPDAT. It's just a questionnaire that really evaluates your vulnerability and assessing a score. It's not your whole story, but it combines that with length of stay in homelessness, severity of service needs, documentation of disability, and say, those persons, though they may not comply with all the rules in a shelter and may not do check all the boxes, they're the ones that need the help first.
I got a question, and this is just a thought. What if somebody wants to be homeless?
Oh, yeah. Whenever I do a public speaking, you hear that. But don't they just want to be homeless? You know, and I almost thought about putting that question on the survey this year. I did it the first 2 years of a homeless count, 2006 and 2007. I said, do you want to be homeless? Just get it out there and ask the question. Yeah. And 98% of them said no. So I was like, you know, superlative. I think that when people are under extraordinary trauma and distress, they will, you know, you have to look at that. There is trauma going on. If you're on a 24-hour life cycle of how am I going to get food, how am I going to get shelter, will I be safe, will I eat, and that's your modus, and you're under that stress day in, day out, day after day, week after week, some people year after year, you cognitively, you're going to respond to those questions very in a different way than I will when I have a nice home and a car and everything that I need and a job. I don't believe that anyone wants to be disengaged and homeless when they, I don't believe that this is, I believe that they may prefer it to a shelter, or they may prefer it to rules, or prefer it to another situation. But to say, I want to, I don't believe that. I'm kind of going on. I'd rather hear from you all.
Yeah.
I rather prefer the street, because like I told you earlier, yep. I've done all the shelters before, mm-hmm. and I've tried to get mm-hmm. them to help me with housing, to get them to help me with a job. Like in the first episode I was on, we talked about how long it took mm-hmm. when the bridge first opened. They were saying it was supposed to take up to a year for you to get housing from beginning to getting in your house. And it was taking over 2 years for them to do that mm-hmm. when the bridge first opened in 2008. Mm-hmm. I know my ex-sister-in-law, before she was there, she was on that list. Mm-hmm. She took herself off the list because it took over 2 years for them to even say anything to her. Mm-hmm. What was going on with the housing? Why she wasn't moving up the list the way she should have been? Because she done everything that they had asked her to do.
I got a question for you, Trisha. If somebody wants to be homeless. If somebody wants to be homeless, are they wrong?
I'm thinking about that one. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I know I could go back home. I just don't want to go back. Yeah. Because if I do see my dad, I mean, we can't get along. Mm-hmm. And he's got depression, I got depression, and anxiety. And I just, if I go back there, mm-hmm. it's going to be worse on me.
Do you consider yourself a bad person because of that?
Mm-hmm. Half the time I do.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I do, because I've been through a lot in my whole life. Yeah.
We all have. I mean, mm-hmm. just the other day I was sitting at the help desk, and Antoinette's like, yo, have you seen this guy? I'm like, I don't know this guy. And I'm still talking to her, and she's helping me with something, and the guy comes in. She's like, hey, your dad's looking for you. He's going to buy you a ticket to come home. And he's like, I'm not going back to Kansas or mm-hmm. Arkansas or something. Mm-hmm. I'm going to New Orleans for Mardi Gras, and then I'm going to New York. And I'm saying to myself, well, wow, why doesn't, like you homeless and you rather be a vagrant or a vagabond or a tramp, or you rather be, you know, an outdoor individual than actually, you know, housed. So my question, mm-hmm. you know, this is, me and Jason talked about it earlier, and he said, you know what, Rashad is a voice for the people, bro. He's a voice for the homeless side. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm definitely about the advocacy of individuals being helped when they need it. Mm-hmm. And even if they want it, if they desire it. Mm-hmm. But yo, I listened to the podcast, the first one, and yo, my mood was different. Like, yo.
But that's why I said earlier what I said. Now, since Jasmine's here, she can know.
I mean, I was how in love.
You became. Now, since Jasmine's here, you and Jasmine mm-hmm. can tell how you became.
Whoa.
How you became the host of this podcast.
Whoa. I mean, me and Jasmine, in a sense, bro, we've been blind, bro. We've been blind, dude. Like, not. I won't speak for Jasmine, but I'll speak for me. When I say we've been. Blind. When I say we've been blind, bro, it's like, just put on your glasses,
I didn't
yo.
I my glasses.
You said see, blind.
This is almost. I'm getting close.
See, this is the vibrancy, the life and the love that we have amongst each other in the homeless community. But yo, we've been dealing with service providers, dealing with so many tasks and so many different things to the point where I'm really sitting back and I'm going, nah, that ain't what it is, yo. I'm missing the key element in discovering what we can do, not to end homelessness or well, not even to be an advocate. There's a difference in being just a service provider who's providing services and even being a terminator of homelessness, which I don't remember for sure. But when Mike Faenza was on, he gave us the mission statement of MDHA. And then me and you, we went back and forth about it for a while. Like, how are you going to end homelessness?
Oh, that's everyone's mission, I think. Even at the federal level is to end homelessness. And I, by like this year, I think was one of them. And 2017, and I think, is the next deadline.
Right.
But I, anyone who receives HUD funding and that kind of, I mean, I understand the housing first thing. I understand that giving Trisha a roof over her head is ending homelessness. But I'm a firm believer and homelessness is much more complicated than being housed.
I got a question for you, Jasmine. If one person gets help getting off the street, how many more other people are becoming homeless? If one person gets off of it, how many people are coming right behind that one person and becoming homeless?
Well, my thing is, I don't know a number to that, but I'm a firm believer that the biggest link to homelessness is poverty. More than mental illness, more than drug abuse, more than any of those other factors, it's mm-hmm. poverty. Because you're right, Jason, every time you get someone into housing, we have an affordable housing crisis in Dallas. So
yeah, that's
we have tens of thousands of people on Section 8 voucher lists, and we don't have enough housing for people. And yes, having mm-hmm. expecting someone vulnerable to wait a year, 2 years in radio silence about housing, expecting them to believe that there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
They're getting off the street.
And not to somehow get into more trouble in the meantime, resorting to drugs, resorting to violence to defend oneself in the street, getting in trouble, getting kicked out of the library, Jason.
Hold on. Stop. Mm-hmm. Would you say, no, if it wasn't for her, if it wasn't for Trish, honestly, I would be in jail right now. Mm-hmm. Honestly, if it wasn't for this woman right here for the last 2.5 years of putting up with my bull crap.
Still,
I question that every time I see her. I'm like, how do you put up with Jason?
But God put her in my life for a reason to calm me down. He did. Because if it wasn't for him doing that, like I said, I'd either be in jail for the rest of my life or even dead if it wasn't for her.
Well, let me thank Trisha first off before I go into my next statement. Girl, thank you. You understand.
Yeah, we all dealt with it.
Jason
and don't get me wrong, Jasmine and Rashad, y'all helped me too. Don't get me wrong. And the library has helped me too. And I'm not going to take nothing from the library because it started with the library.
And that's why
I was going through this before I even got with Trish. And y'all helped me. Y'all started helping me. But she just was the third leg. I can say the third leg.
Okay. Oh, man. So the podcast, in a sense, you know, we started and we said we was going to promote humility. And I was getting upset because I just felt like, you know, we talked about this on the last podcast, how some individuals don't, you know, they don't run to a resource, even though your whole initiative mm-hmm. is to push this resource out. Mm-hmm. And so Jay, you know, one of the only brothers I know in the homeless community that's pushing the podcast. I mean, came and put a big push on me and I put a big push on Jasmine, you know, to put the podcast. And then Jasmine put a big push on Ryan to put the podcast on YouTube. So that's up and running, you dig? So you can catch season one and season two up on YouTube. And Jay was like, nah, man, y'all only put the first three episodes on YouTube.
Up until my episode. It was up until my episode that I was in the first season. That was the only thing that was on YouTube. I kept wanting to go back. I kept going back, looking and see if there was more put up there. And for over a year, there was only those three up there. I come to Rashad, what, 2 weeks ago, maybe? Three weeks ago, maybe? And I came to
Ryan.
I said, why is there only three up there?
I mean, Jay jumped out.
And then, like, 2 days later, number four got put up there. And then, like, 2 days ago, Rashad come and told me the rest of them were up there. So I've been trying to listen to them all in the library. Hopefully, I don't get in trouble for my music being, or the podcast being too loud.
Are you still saving him, Jasmine?
Jasmine don't need, yes, for that, yes.
Look, Jasmine don't need to save me on that because these security guards here, they know what that is because I've told them. And I want other people in the library that are around me that are homeless or not even homeless. They don't even have to be homeless. You know what I'm saying? They don't have to. Just promote it where people can get it out there and we can get. I'm not saying I don't want to get views or get them to. I want to get them to listen to it to understand what we're going through. Not what just what we're going through. What other. If they can find somebody outside of the library where they stay at that's homeless, where they can push them to. The resources we have here.
And that's what I'm aiming at, Jay. When the streets start talking to me and start telling me, yo, man, you doing a podcast? When the streets start talking to me and saying, yo, you the dude from the podcast and yo, this is what I want to talk about. Can you bring me on? That's when I'll be satisfied.
And that's what I'm trying to get for you. And that's what exactly what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get these other people. But it can't just be here, though, in Dallas. This has got to be pushed out. Dallas might have started it. But I want it to go out further than Dallas. Yo, really, honestly, I really do.
Y'all stay tuned to the Street View Podcast. We'll be right back.
So yeah, as Rashad said, the podcast, all episodes are now live on YouTube. Just search Street View Podcast, and I want to thank Jason for his persistence.
Thank you.
And getting it on there. I think, you know, one of our goals for this year was trying to get the homeless community to hear it more. I know that you really want the rest of the world to hear it, which the world is hearing it. Other cities across the country are
but like
listening.
I said, it has to start here first.
And it starts here and get to the people who need to hear it. You know, we have a lot of wonderful service providers that are tuning in. We have a lot of, you know, community members that are tuning in, which is great because their perceptions are changing every day. But I want the homeless community to know what we're doing. And a lot of people ask us, you know, what are your outcomes for the podcast? Like, what is your goal? And I'm like, it's not one of those quantitative things. It really is about providing a voice and celebrating people. It's like celebrating our humanity. I was just in a meeting and we had this presentation, and one of the things that the gentleman who provided the training said that really stood out to me was, I wrote it down. Here we go. Everybody you will ever meet knows something you don't. And wow. I think it really lends to that we all have life experiences and we need to celebrate each other. Housed, unhoused, it doesn't matter. And if we can get to the root of our humanity and connect with each other, we're going to get a lot further than, you know, trying to band-aid things or try to, you know, put Trish in housing or tell her to go live with her dad without understanding sort of the complexity of Trisha and then just embracing her and loving her and celebrating her and knowing that just because someone's homeless and on the street or asking for money or sleeping on the street, that they are someone worth being celebrated and they know something that I don't know and they're doing something. And so I want you guys to have an opportunity to talk about some of the service you were providing. I don't think people who generally think about people experiencing homelessness think about them doing community service or helping others because they're the ones that need the help, but actually they're some of the most helpful people I know. And, you know, we've had these tornadoes recently. We have people who are without homes. And like Wayne said, you know, they probably have house insurance. They have all these things. They're going to be okay. But it doesn't
they're
take
not.
Away.
Jasmine,
so tell
not.
Us a little bit more about your experience with that.
Jasmine, they're not. This lady that we work, this husband and, well, when we first got to Rowlett, it was in Rowlett that we was working. When we got to this neighborhood, Jasmine, something came over me like, it was only in the movie. This could only happen in the movie. That movie Twister, I thought that was the only place that I would ever see that much destruction from one tornado. Until I seen yesterday how movies are just movies. Mm-hmm. Mother Nature is Mother Nature. When she wants to come and destroy it, wherever she wants to go through, it's going to happen. We can't stop it at all. And if you look at some of the pictures we got from Rowlett, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. These people are going to be going through this recovery for years, not just months. I think personally, me, from what I experienced looking in these in that one neighborhood, this is going to be years before they get back to where they were.
What about you, Trish? What'd you see?
It was a mess. Real mess. And then on the next street over, it was worse than the street that we were. It was, I mean, I almost started crying because I was taking videos of that street. I was taking pictures of all the houses, and I almost started crying. I was like, how unbelievable these people are of going through that tornado.
And this is only in 65 years, I looked it up. In 65 years, since 1950, this is only the second EF4 tornado that has went through Dallas in 65 years. Since they started writing down how much damage they do, this is only the second EF4 tornado that has come through Dallas. All of them were EF3s, 2s, and 1s before this. Dallas has only seen this kind of tornado in 65 years twice.
I have a question for you, Jason, and for you, Trisha, as well. Just coming from your experiences in life and having experienced homelessness and being without, what made you decide to go and help these people who didn't necessarily share in your background and have the same experiences?
Because that's what I'm here for. Like I said in the first podcast I was on, I'm not here for myself. I'm here to help people that need it. Even though I need it, like in the Bible, it goes back to the Bible. God had an experience being homeless to help the homeless or to help the people in need. That was why I came in. If you listen to the first one, I said it on the first one that I needed to experience it before I can help them. The people that I was trying to help, I needed to be right where they were at. I don't need to be on the street, okay? I have family in Irving. I'm choosing to be here because God put me in Dallas for a reason in 2005. It goes back to the first podcast. I'm here for them. I'm here to help people out, not myself, honestly. That's just me.
And what about you, Trish? What made you want to go out and help?
I've helped this one lady and now when I was staying with her, but automatically it's just in the heart of these people. It's like the tornadoes that it's like in Oklahoma or wherever, and that it's like the bombings and everything. It's just the heart goes out, and then
the people you don't even know.
Mm-hmm. And God just wanted me to be there to help.
That you guys consider it a blessing too. No,
I don't want nothing from it, Rashad. I really don't.
No, I mean,
I just want those people to get back to their normal life, man. This lady that we was helping, it was her, her husband, and her two kids. In a small bathroom. His kids, his wife, and then he was laying over the top of them. This bathroom was not touched at all. Out of the whole house, everything else was around that bathroom was gone. Everything around this bathroom was gone. This little bathroom, I swear, was maybe the width of this table, and maybe from this to the wall. That's how big this bathroom was. And they survived, and the bathroom was not even touched. It was like this room. And just imagine everything around this one room gone.
You know, when I got to the bridge, my caseworker and I had a conversation, and I know that's kind of confidential. I shouldn't give too much of it. But she was like, yo, what are you going to do? And I said, man, listen, I'm going to help these folks. I said, I'm going to be here with each other, because they couldn't really help me with housing based up on my criminal background. Another thing I want to talk about is how Wayne says something that really makes sense. He says, you can house these cats, but what about what happens then? After Jason, who's been on the streets, I don't know how long. Jay, how long?
I've been off for 9 years now.
All right. Now, after you put Jay in the house, and you never go see him again, what you think Jay going to do with that house?
I'm going to keep it. ain't no going back on the streets after we get in.
I
won't say not going back on the street because you never know. You never know what's going to happen. There could be new management and whatever, you know, and it happens. It happens. New management comes in and wants to hire the rent and people can't afford the rent anymore. So where do they got to go?
Right.
Right back where they came from.
That's a hypothetical. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Jay, yo, you know, imagine eating 7-Eleven pizza.
I do it all the time.
I know. I mean, but imagine now you got a house, man. You got a financial responsibility. You can't just walk over there and get you two slices of pizza for $2. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm struggling with it right now, bro. I'm looking at the transition, and I wanted to address my listeners right quick about something. Yo, you know what hit me last night? I'm not homeless, though. That hit me.
like, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Cause I had been worried on the last podcast. I was talking about everybody's got something going on. I don't got nothing going on. Everybody's got kids. I don't got no kids. And then I thought about it, yo. I thought about it last night. It's like, dude, cause you still in the mindset of you representing the homeless. Mm-hmm. And because you're in their situation in the current. No, bro. I didn't graduate to the public. Right. I'm the public now. Right. So with that said, Ms. Crane, who owns public space?
Who owns public space? You know, I could get all Jeffersonian on you, but
I swear that was Wayne Walker's response to when you said it the first time too. Who owns public space? That was his same exact response, if I can remember right.
Yeah, taxpayers.
No, it's well.
Is it public with a capital P or public with a small P?
It doesn't matter. Public.
Y'all going through that with Tent City right now, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, Tent City, the land under that, it belongs to TxDOT. TxDOT has authorized the city of Dallas to manage this, to manage the space. Mm-hmm. So they can, you know, so that's coming up. That was a maintenance agreement between the city of Dallas and TxDOT. And that has been amended so that the city of Dallas actually has some control over what happens in that space. Ooh. So just know that. I mean, that's just law, legal, that's a fact. So Tent City is in an illegal encampment that is tolerated by the community because it would be immoral, to use your phrase, to evict them from this public with the capital P space if you have no place else to send them but into some sliver of right-of-way on a public sidewalk, maybe. Or so this is, you know, about when you think about public and policy, there's always conflict and there's always dilemma. I have the rights of a property owner and the rights of your humanity. And my right, does a human have a right in our country to have shelter and food and safety and health care? I think we do. I think we're wealthy enough to provide that to the citizens of our community. Mm-hmm. So, and you may not be a taxpayer now as an unemployed person experiencing homelessness, but you were. You put cash money in the system, so, you know, in somewhere. Right. Or you bought, well, maybe not. You probably didn't pay sales tax on the pizza that you got at the 7-Eleven, but you might have. So you're all contributors in one way or another. I don't know. You're walking down a very Jeffersonian conversation. We could go on and on for a long time.
Huh? Would you look at me like that for?
Yeah.
Cause I understand, you understand about that beat. That's what that was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yo, I'm just being honest.
Mm-hmm. The activity that you and Tricia, that is what a good citizen who loves their community does. They go and help others in need, and you have demonstrated that. So in anyone who has a feeling that somehow persons who are homeless are not doing their due diligence and they're participating as a productive citizen of a community, you have demonstrated quickly that, yes, you do. And people who live under I-45, I know there are many residents go around, pick up the trash, make sure you're doing within your community where you are, giving with what you have. And to me, there is no more threshold or eligibility or deserving.
Right.
You are a part of this community and doing your share.
I've had picking up the garbage thing. That's me, because where I stay at, they don't bother me. They mm-hmm. don't. And if I start leaving garbage, that's when they're going to mm-hmm. start bothering me. They've done it plenty of times to mm-hmm. me before. That's why I don't like nobody staying around or nobody mm-hmm. knowing where me and her mm-hmm. stay at, because yeah. it's going to happen again. It happens to me every time. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I try not to let nobody know where I stay at, because just like this morning, I had two friends stay with us the other mm-hmm. night, and then they stayed there all day yesterday mm-hmm. and come back and found a bunch of their garbage laying around. Mm-hmm. I haven't told mm-hmm. them nothing yet, but I will yeah. when I see them. Sorry for this being on the podcast. You can edit it out if you want.
Please don't edit that out.
Yeah. That's look, those two friends, Jason's coming for you.
But the thing is that when we mm-hmm. let them come over there, I had said, please do not leave no garbage or nothing laying around. Okay. And then come last night, there was garbage laying around for mm-hmm. both of them. Mm-hmm. And this sweater right here was theirs.
So, uh-oh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. First off, thank you for putting it that way. You know, mm-hmm. upstanding, upright citizen in society's mm-hmm. viewpoint looks at Jason and says, you're the upright, mm-hmm. standing citizen in society.
Mm-hmm. But how and why?
Because
for the people that know me, like y'all mm-hmm. and people, friends that I have, we'll probably have a totally different because they know me. Yeah. But now if I'm walking, okay, now, Jasmine, I know you got a question, but hold that for a second. When I'm walking down the street, I've noticed since I was on the last time, I got a lot more people saying hello to me, good morning to me. Yeah. As before, when I was on the first time, there weren't that many people in downtown. I'm not just saying wherever I'm at.
Yeah.
But I noticed more downtown where it was happening, the way he was trying to push away. See, what the homeless don't understand is if you don't talk to these people down here and get to know them as a person, they're going to treat you the same way they've always treated you. And like I said, if it wasn't for Shorty, honestly, for a lot of you, you might not know who he is, but Rashad does. And Shorty, if it wasn't for Shorty introducing me to a lot of these people down here, it's because of Shorty I know a lot of these people down here.
Bro, I miss that dude, bro. I miss that dude. I ain't seen that. When the last time you seen dude?
What, a month ago?
Monaco?
Yes. It's been like a week ago.
About a week ago.
Seriously?
Yes.
For y'all.
I didn't see him.
He comes here every couple of days.
Yeah. The first podcast, I promised that Shorty was going to be on this podcast, bro. Shorty was with us from day one, bro. I mean, talking about coming up in here with a scooter with bags on it and leaving it in the library and running off, yo.
And getting Jason in trouble for trying to take care of Shorty's stuff.
Yes, yes, yes. But you know what? Yeah, Shorty's has some personal problems. Mm-hmm. That's why you don't see Shorty as often as you used to.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to put his business out there. That's why I said Shorty has some personal problems going on right now. Mm-hmm. That's why he doesn't show up frequently like he used to. So for me being Shorty's friend, I can tell you that I think it's going to start calming down now and he will start showing back up more.
Do me a favor.
I will tell him. I already knew what you were going to say. I will tell him. I'll let him know that you want to talk to him, actually.
Yeah. And I want him on a podcast.
You got to fight with him about that, not me.
Cindy, I just want to know if you had any questions for Jason and Trisha
and Rashad and everybody. I go to a lot of national conferences on homelessness to learn about best practices and, you know, innovations that are going on. And I will tell you, there are many communities who have public libraries who don't take the attitude that Dallas does. It's an extraordinary asset. They do everything they can. They want to figure out any way to forbid individuals. And another thing you talked about downtown, and this is me, and you know, I was talking with a neighborhood association leader downtown and talking, and there were some homeless individuals who were walking by, and then someone went into, there's a nice little kind of a park there, and the person walked over, sat down next to the, it was a little warmer, next to the fountain, and was just sitting there, just watching, and he said, "Well, you see like that?" And I go, "I think that person has just made a very sane human decision in this bustling city to go sit down by in a park with a nice tree and a beautiful fountain." That might have been his only peace for the day.
Right.
Not 6 inches away on another mat with another person and having very little autonomous private space. That is public space.
Yes.
And that was extraordinary. And when I said it that way, I said, who wouldn't want to be in a nice park? Who wouldn't want to enjoy that? So that person is making a very good, rational human decision. And then he sort of changed his attitude a little bit.
Yeah, that was a nice perspective.
Like, oh, yeah. You know, he's like, you know, I kind of wish I could do that too. So I think that fear is usually fear and distrust. It's why some people experiencing homelessness don't want anybody to know where they're staying. Fear, mistrust. Why that neighborhood association person didn't want to see the homeless person in his neighborhood. Fear, and mistrust. And so I think that this podcast is part of the story just to break down those barriers. Cause, you know, it's, that we have 99.99% in common between you and me and everyone around this table in this podcast room right now. There's just a very subtle difference between us, and it's completely surmountable through communication and open dialogue.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
I definitely, definitely appreciate you being here, representing MDHA. If an individual wanted to get in contact with you guys, or just wanted to know more about you, mm-hmm. How would they do that?
The internet, Dr. Google. Dr. Google. Yeah, that's right. MDHADallas.org. And yeah, absolutely.
How's everybody? I mean, where we at? What y'all thinking?
I actually have another question for her just real quickly.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I seen you had our calling book over there when I first walked in. Now, what are you guys doing, real quickly, what are you guys doing with our calling to help? I'm sorry, Rashad, that was your question, but
no, it wasn't. Wayne was on.
I know, yeah, Wayne was on yesterday. I know Wayne was on yesterday, but she's on today.
I've absolutely been very focused on the unsheltered homeless because Dallas doesn't have the breadth and depth of street outreach providers that we do. And our calling does a tremendous job. And that was a bridge that I wanted to mend. And I went straight over there and said, here's the assets. I like your website. I like what you do. How can I help? I told him about some resources I could help him with, and he has resources for me. One of the exciting things that we're going to do for the first time in the homeless count in January, it's not going to just go around anonymous. I'm going to take this as extensive street outreach opportunity. And when we survey individuals experiencing unsheltered homeless in January, I'm going to ask you your name. Can I have your name? Would you like some follow-up street outreach?
Yes.
How can I contact you? Are you going to be here? And do you give me an can I take your picture? Because this is an opportunity to document your unsheltered homelessness, something very difficult to do and necessary for federal eligibility. And our calling has their app. And so on that night, all those volunteers are going to be able to utilize the Our Calling app to take a picture and put the route and the name to go into the data system so that we will have a formal HUD-recognized documentation of homelessness on that night.
So that'll go from you guys being out there doing it straight onto their apps to all these places?
Our calling, we're going
to
coordinate it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if the client wants it, or if the client, if the person, you got to have consent. Right. Yeah. I mean, your autonomy.
Because I know there's a lot of people out there that don't like the picture taken or don't even like.
Oh, no, you would never.
Somebody like you, somebody like you even trying to help them. I've known people out there that don't even want the help.
Yep.
They've been through so much trauma with whoever or whatever they had going on that they don't want the help.
Yeah. Broken promises. Like there was distressed.
A girl. I'm sorry, it's taking so long, y'all. There was a girl that came to this library one day, and I had a 45-minute conversation with her. The first person she ever talked to coming out here. I asked her. My question to her was, "Why are you homeless?" She, you know what her answer was to me? She was only 16 years old at the time. This is a 16-year-old female saying, "I wanted to know how it felt to be homeless." At 16 years old, how are you when you got a mother at home, a father at home, whatever? You got family at home. You want to try out what it feels like? Trust me, you do not want to be homeless the city of Dallas.
It's funny you say that, Jay. Well, my cousin, when I first told him about this, I hadn't been home in a long time. And I first told him about the podcast, yo. He said, man, I'm going to be homeless, bro, one day. He says, man, if God forbid, but if I lose it all, man, I'm going to just go be homeless in the woods. And he didn't understand.
He don't understand what it be because he's never been there before.
Yeah.
He's never been there. For somebody that hasn't been there before could never ever know until they do it. And that's the reason why I did it and I stayed out here so long was because I had to experience it first to help the people that I was trying to help or trying to help. Still, even today, I'm still trying to do it. Just the other day, I gave a homeless person asked me to help him out with a dollar. I gave the man my last dollar when I didn't even have to, but I know what I'm here for, so I had to.
You know what? Before we wrap up, I want to give a shout out to a couple of people. Bill Thompson over at UGM.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, nobody, I honestly think nobody gives him credit for what he's done with UGM. They really don't. They want to talk about
him. That's because they never really see him, though.
No, it's not that.
I mean, he breaches.
You'll know who's doing the work.
Yeah.
You'll know who's doing the work if you know about UGM. You know he's the top guy. He's the top guy, and it goes down from him. And everybody he's got underneath him is doing an excellent job over there, but the people don't want to go over there and stay over there because they got to go through a shower first before they get into the show.
We'll talk about
seriously.
That. Me and you will talk about that later because I know you want to get back into that.
Okay.
Oh, Bill Thompson is going through. He's been diagnosed with cancer, and we just want to support. He's been a great mentor to me. And just been a great facility. And he's just been a great guy all around as far as the city's concerned, preaching wise, and good, dignified African American male as well. So I wanted to just really send a shout out to him. Also, man, I just want to shout out to the folks out there in Rowlett, man. We were going to have Judy from the Stoop Pot.
Yeah, because we talked about that last week.
I called Judy and Judy said, man, I got hit. My house got hit by them. And so I won't probably be able to do a podcast probably until like June. And so I want to shout out to them folk, man. Mm-hmm. A lot of folk just really, really, really need some love and some nurture and some care right about now. And, we got it for you here at the library, yo. Jason, full of the persistence, you dig? I'm full of the morality, you dig? we got Antoinette with, you know, she right there at the help desk.
Look, if this is somebody's house, man. This is somebody's house.
I'm gonna close the podcast up right now. So, like I said, let's pray. Father God in heaven, we come right now in the name of Jesus Christ. We come right now with truth, with love, with humility, with humor. We come with joy. Thank you for peace. In the midst of chaos, in the midst of storms, in the midst of cancer, things like that, Pop, we still could count on you because we still breathing. We still got the acknowledgement. There's somebody else around us that's breathing too. So with all of that said, Pop, with the mouthful said, we say thank you in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Street View. You can visit us online at streetviewpodcast.com. Tune us in again next time for more discussion.